Hello, and welcome to the Empowerography Podcast. This is a platform created for women's voices to be heard and a place to share their stories, journeys, and successes with the world for the purpose of helping other women who might be on similar journeys. We are empowering women one episode at a time. I'm your host, Brad Walsh, so kick back, grab one of your favorite beverages, and enjoy the stories. The world needs to hear your message and your story, so don't deny the world of that gift within you that the universe has given you. Someone out there needs to hear your story because it will support them in feeling hope, inspired, and even transformed. Do you want to discover how I help get my clients out of their own way, show up, and confidently share their message? I would love to extend an invitation to you to join me in my free masterclass, Start Your Own Podcast from Idea to Implementation, on Wednesday, April 5th at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can find the registry link in the show notes. Hope to see you there. Hello there, Brad Walsh here, your host of the Empowerography Podcast. Today, my guest is Amanda Costura. She is the owner and founder of Carve Your Own Path. Welcome, Amanda. How are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having me, Brad.
It is my honor and my pleasure. I am so excited to have you here. So with that being said, let's jump right in. Can you tell us a little bit about the company and when you founded it?
So Carve Your Own Path is a nonprofit mental health organization. We are located in Northeast Ohio in the Akron area. We can serve most of Ohio and even actually outside of Ohio for different things. We take an inclusive and holistic approach to mental health and wellness. We have a variety of different types of services, from mental health counseling with some specialties in there to Reiki and yoga. And then we also do professional development, employee wellness, more community business type support, and wellness workshops for the community as well. So lots of things happen in there that we can definitely delve into later.
Yeah. I love the holistic approach, though, including the Reiki and the more spiritual side of things. I think that's so important, and it's beautiful that you do that. And when did you found the company? When
did you start it? Sorry about that. That's okay. We actually just celebrated five, not just anymore. It's time.
Wow.
But November was 5 years.
So congratulations.
2018. Yeah, thank you very much. It's awesome. It was a big milestone.
So. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so what was the inspiration for you to start your organization and work in the mental health field?
Yeah, so I think starting my organization came out of what it comes out of for a lot of people, I'm realizing, that go into entrepreneurship in any sort of way, is I had my own situation of being brought to my knees. I worked in nonprofits and mental health and social service agencies for about 10 years while I was finishing my undergrad in psychology and my master's in social work, and then a few years afterward. And I very quickly realized that my education, my values, my goals, everything I was working so hard to do was a big misalignment with what was actually happening in the world, right? You kind of got that knocked down when you have this dreamy, I want to go help everyone and fix all these problems. And it wasn't that reality. And it wasn't even just the contrast of what was reality versus expectation. It was very toxic work environments. And I look at it now and I see like full on cycles of domestic violence, but like in a workplace setting. Wow. And I got to the point with my own physical and mental health that I wasn't going to be here sitting in front of you. I wasn't going to make it much longer to keep doing what I'm called to do. And so I left a job without having anything lined up. I put my notice in, and I was very much in a privileged place to be able to do that. Many people don't have that option, but I left without knowing what to do. And in the transition of getting another job, I founded Carve Your Own Path. I had no idea how to run an organization, how to run a nonprofit. I just knew what not to do, and I would figure out the rest because I had this dreamy vision of what that could be.
Well, it's self-preservation, right? It's either you end up a complete disaster and mess, and as you said, not here talking to me right now, or you preserve and you got to leave. Sometimes you just have to. And yeah, understandably, privilege plays a part in that too. But also, I think that if it's mental health or living or money, I mean, you have to put yourself first. It's a tough decision to make for sure. And then, as you said, leaving there and not having a clue how to run an organization, entrepreneurship is probably one of the biggest tests that we will ever go through in life for those who have jumped into the entrepreneurial world. It will stretch you and push you and use muscles you never even knew you had. It is a huge thing to take on.
Yeah, absolutely. That and parenthood, I think, are things that test you. So in this process, he's almost 2.5. So
yeah.
I also then in this process of learning how to be an entrepreneur and grow this business, had a child too. So yes, pulled in all the directions and all the ways. I just jumped off the cliff and I built the bridge as I went, and I'm still building it today. I'm not sure like what mountain we're getting to next, but we always land on our feet, or if there we fall down, we have wonderful support to pick us up. So
beautiful. I love it. So what drives, motivates, and inspires you to keep going and excelling at all that you do, Amanda?
Oh, it's such a hard question. There's so much work to do. The initial thing that comes to mind is there's so much work to do. Ideally, I would love to not have this job. I don't want social work to be a necessity. My dream is that everyone is empowered with the skills they need to take care of their bodies and regulate their nervous systems and communicate effectively with each other and take care of themselves and take care of each other and have all the resources they need. And right. And
in ideal a perfect world.
Right. Yeah. But unfortunately, I don't see that happening anytime soon. So I just, and I know this is probably in your later questions, but I've just always felt that it was in me. I was always the person that people were going to. I was always like, oh, did you know you could get this? I was always like, even as a child, right?
Yeah.
Like people were coming to me or going to the grocery store. People are like, how are you today? And I'm like, I'm okay. How are you? And they're like, oh, my dog died. And I'm like, okay. Like I was just that person. And I really care and have a deep concern for people and justice and basic human rights and access to resources. And I want everyone to feel capable to care for themselves and meet their needs.
Now, I've heard people say that have gotten into the field of mental health work that the work chose them as opposed to them choosing this field of work to get into. Do you feel that way? And if so, why do you feel that way?
Yeah, I always say when people ask me this that I didn't choose, social work chose me. When I originally went to school, I was always fascinated by psychology and sociology and why people interact the way they do. And my own family experiences growing up definitely played into that, wanting to understand why people do the things they do, why they cope the way they do, why they talk and communicate the way they do, or don't for that matter. And so I originally went for psychology, but I very quickly learned that I'm now late diagnosed ADHD. So that's probably part of the purpose, but I did not have another 6 to 8 years in me to go get a doctorate. And when I was looking at programming, it was counseling and social work were the options. And I didn't know anything about social work at that point, but I knew if I went and got this counseling degree and then found myself in front of clients every single day doing counseling and I didn't like it, I hated it. I'm stuck doing that. And I learned you could do that in social work, but you could do a million other things too. So I was like, oh, that's my jam. I don't want to be stuck doing one thing. I'm very eclectic. I'm very multi-passionate. I love being able to do different things, which is great as an entrepreneur as well. So yeah, it was just always a calling for me. It's really funny when we gathered some educational stuff for my ADHD assessment, actually, my mom kept so much because she didn't have much from her childhood. So she kept a lot for me.
Right.
And even just looking back, there was assignments where on the first day of class, what do you think a teacher should be? And even within that was like, a teacher should treat everyone fairly, no matter what they're, you know, what they look like. Mm. It was just like in me from the start, from 6, 7, 8 years old.
Now, being a champion and an advocate for mental health, why is this cause so personally important to you? And why have you decided to make this your personal mission?
I just think we do people a disservice. We put people in school for 12 years or so or beyond, and at no point is anyone ever taught about their body and their nervous system and trauma and stress and how it's stored in the body and how that comes out. And people could be the name of your podcast, like we could be empowering people so much more. It's all about prevention for me, which often we don't put a lot of money into, which is very sad, but it's like, we would not have the problems in the world that we, of course, we're always going to have challenges, but what could it do for us as a society if everybody could communicate better, manage themselves effectively, was emotionally intelligent and able to have meaningful relationships with each other, right? All of that. Again, I'm very visionary and very dreamy, and I could just see what that could look like. Mm. And I just want that for everybody.
Well, I mean, let's start with the fact that the systems that are in place are reactive, not proactive. Mm-hmm. The education system, the healthcare system.
Yep.
You mentioned that the education system, both of those systems for that matter, the education and healthcare, are fucking severely broken and damaged. Mm-hmm. I think that they both need to be burned to the ground and started over again, because we're not doing things correctly. We're not in the school system, in the education system. We should be incorporating wellness and meditation and Reiki and all of these things for the children from a young age. What the system does now is teaches kids to memorize and regurgitate. That's it. And the skills that they're taking out of school, what good are they? They're not useful.
Well, it's interesting because I heard someone say this the other day that we have to stop saying the systems are broken because they're actually working just fine the way
well,
that
they were intended to be. Yes.
We kind of forget that current school system was set up during the industrial time when
by the Rockefellers.
We were wanting to create producers and workers. And so, of course, if you're taught to just sit and listen and do what you're told for an 8-hour day, then that's what's going to produce good workers. And actually, it's ironic that we're having this interview today because I'm involved in our local educational service center. They're kind of in charge of all of the school districts.
Yeah.
And we're working on a wellness playbook for the educators for the whole district to be able to implement. And they don't have time. Some of them want to do these things. They're like, oh yeah, meditation. They don't have time on top of the memorization, the standards they have to meet, all of those things to do it. And it's interesting. There's a really wonderful book called Mark Brackett is the author, Permission to Feel.
Okay.
And he actually talks about research about the education system. And it's so funny. We know this as mental health professionals and other researchers that when your stress brain is online, your thinking brain is not. So if you were not teaching kids how to regulate themselves and stay regulated, then nothing that they're taking in that's so important to you is going to land anywhere. Yeah. And then you're frustrated when you see behaviors and when you're not meeting the test score, right? And it's, hello, we're missing. This needs to be the priority and the rest will come naturally.
Yes. Things need to change. They do.
Absolutely.
Because the old system, yes, as you mentioned, yes, it is working fine because that's how it was set up. But no, we have changed and evolved as a human race and we want more and we want different. Mm-hmm. So it needs to change. They do need to be burned to the ground and started over again with new implementation.
Absolutely.
Could you elaborate on what a holistic approach to mental health means to you and how it differs from more traditional approaches?
Yeah, so I actually get into this conversation a lot when I end up talking about like the differences in profession. And I think social work has such a beautiful approach because we look at the whole person in their environment. Every single person is a walking system. So if you're coming in and you're like, hey, you know, I'm feeling really depressed. I don't know what I'm going to do. Like my check's going to be short, blah, blah, blah. One approach might be, oh, well, here's some stress management skills, or how does that make you feel? Or how could you reframe those thoughts? Whereas a social worker, I'm going to be like, oh, hierarchy of needs. Do you have your basic needs met? Do you need information on a food pantry? Do you have any social supports that could help you? What's your family like? What can they do for you? Right? I'm looking at every piece and all these dimensions of wellness and how they impact somebody. So when you come and get an assessment with me and start doing therapy and counseling, I'm not just going to be looking at you as a pathology and a disorder. I'm going to be looking at you, what was your upbringing like, which people are like, oh, my childhood, I don't need to talk about that. But that's so important for how it shaped you as a person and how you view the world. I talk about not only that, but what access to resources do you have? What support systems? What's your job impact on your career? What's that doing for you? All of that matters. Otherwise, how can I fully support someone if I don't have the full picture? And oftentimes, unfortunately, a part of our organization is we don't panel with insurance. We'll give super bills if people want that for private insurance. And we also offer a sliding fee scale for people to make it more accessible, but we don't take insurance. And one of the reasons is they require a diagnosis to bill. And I don't think in our current systemic oppression world with many, we work with people from marginalized identities as well.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with you. You don't need to be pathologized just because the world is oppressing you. And so, sorry, I know I went on a tangent, but no, I think that it's really important that we consider these things because, of course, if I was systemically oppressed in those ways that you are and marginalized the way you are, I would be upset too. I would have a hard time coping. Okay, come process and let me give you some resources and validation for that, not tell you, oh, let me pathologize you with a diagnosis day one after meeting you for 53 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, that's just totally inappropriate in my opinion. Yeah. You can't fully know somebody's holistic life in that amount of time.
No. Well, we're in a horrible time right now with all that's going on in the world. People are suffering. People are struggling. I mean, here in Canada, they're saying that we have 2 million people in the country lining up to use the food bank because of the state of affairs that we're in right now in this country in particular. We've never had that many people using the food bank. It's horrible.
Yep.
And the government just keeps jacking shit up. Prices keep going up on everything. Wages are staying the same. Like, people are struggling and it's horrible. And that is, of course, going to affect everyone's mental health.
Absolutely.
It's a huge struggle.
Yeah, there's a trend going around on social. I mean, not necessarily a trend, but a common theme I'm seeing where, I mean, and I see it everywhere. I'll see TikTok videos about nurses saying, hey, like my husband and I'm a nurse and he has this job and we can't make ends meet in childcare. Yep. Like, we can't even afford childcare. Do I quit my job that I went to school for? And then I'm in some moms groups on Facebook and they're like, how do you do this? And is anyone else struggling? Like, we can barely pay for the groceries this week. And the comments are just like, us too, us too, us too, us too. And these aren't people that are in impoverished areas. They're working.
They have good paying jobs.
Class. Yeah.
It's horrible. Horrible. How do you collaborate with mental health professionals, holistic practitioners, and other experts to create a well-rounded support system for individuals in need?
Yeah. So as far as other mental health professionals, if it's outside of our competency or specialty, we're definitely referring out. And that might be a conjoint, like a collaborative effort where, for example, I have a client that I see for trauma work, but they also have a specific diagnosis that I'm not trained in. So they have a special therapist for that. And they only talk to their therapist about that. And they talk to me about the trauma work. We, within our practice, have lots of clients that will use multiple services. So they might see myself for therapy, but then they go, I'm like, hey, there's something there and we just can't figure out or uncover it. Hey, go see Jenna for some art therapy sessions and see what comes up, or go do a Reiki session with Lisa and get some stuff cleansed out. So we kind of shuffle around in within the practice, but also we have really good relationships with other holistic minded practitioners like chiropractors, acupuncturists, pelvic floor therapy, even financial coaches to help people communicate with their spouse about finances, because that all comes into play when we look at people
for sure. For sure. I love it. Thank you for sharing that. Communities, of course, play a very vital and integral role in mental health. How does your not-for-profit engage with and involve communities in fostering a supportive environment for mental health?
Yeah. So I think one of the biggest pieces is being super active on social, which might sound small, but we're trying to post and share validating things and normalizing things and educational things to let people know you're not alone. There's nothing wrong with you. If you've experienced this type of thing, it's normal that you would feel this way or that you would act this way, especially when you weren't given actual tools to deal with it. And so that's one of the ways. We also have a monthly newsletter that we do that in as well. We co-host a podcast where we bring guests on to talk about the multiple dimensions of wellness and share that information. So just lots of education and empowerment. I go on live on TikTok or share videos there as well to kind of educate people. And then we collaborate. So like those partners that we've created, we'll collaborate with them to do events in the community. So for example, the chiropractor that we work with a lot, we did a stress management session for people to come to, and they got to get a presentation from me about that. But then they also got to do signups for a 10-minute Reiki session or a 10-minute chair massage type thing. So we're always out in the community sharing that. We do a lot of events, community events, employee wellness fairs at different organizations, things like that.
Love it. Nonprofits, of course, often face financial challenges. How do you navigate those challenges, ensuring the sustainability of your programs and services?
This is such a fun question. And I say that with all the sarcasm in my voice.
Yes.
So we, in the first few years, again, I didn't know what I didn't know, and I only had the experience I did. So for the first couple years, we really functioned only on fee for service. We didn't have any other income streams, or there was us, me and my husband, putting our own money into the business, but no other donors or grants or anything like that. And in the last couple of years, we had a consultant come in and do a full case statement of need and strategic plan. And part of our strategic plan is to diversify our funding streams. So we actually were awarded our very first grant.
Congratulations.
At the end of last year that we will implement this year. And we are heavy deep in the process of application after application now, and working on diversifying our funding streams. Something that I saw, which is why one of the contributing factors to that toxic environment that I left was in at that time frame, we went through a process in our area, in our state, and I think nationwide actually, of Medicaid redesign. So where our public assistance medical insurance was, the way they were billing and the way they were going to accept things was being completely redesigned regarding behavioral health. And that organization panicked. And so it was very much a very toxic thing, because it was like, productivity is required and you need to do this and there's no time for you to be a human. You're just getting moved around. And then when I left the job and I found something in between, it was like a breath of fresh air. The CEO in your orientation was telling you very transparently what income streams, they have this program, they have this program, then they do this and they have this fundraiser. And I was like, wow. They're not just requiring, or they're not only relying on this one source of income that could totally shift everything in their organization if something happened to it. They have plans and options and opportunities. And that was something I took to heart, was always diverse. It took me a while to get there, but now we're really implementing having those diverse income streams.
Providers of holistic care face burnout. I mean, we're hearing burnout, nurses in the healthcare industry, all of these things. How does your business address burnout among care providers, among people like yourself and the people who work for you, ensuring that their well-being is looked after while they're supporting others?
Yeah. So first things first, I think it's probably been about a year now since I did this official post on LinkedIn, but it got a lot of traction, but it was titled Burnout is Bullshit.
Okay.
So burnout as a title is bullshit because it puts the moral failure on the individual provider. And burnout isn't the problem. We're not the problem. Educators aren't the problem, right?
Yeah.
The lack of support.
Yes.
It's the constraint, the time constraints. It's the high stress and high productivity.
The workload.
Right? Yeah. It's all of those things. So I just have to say that to validate for people, there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
That you can't keep up because you're not a robot, basically.
Yeah. You're a human being.
Exactly. And so that's exactly what I do. Like our team, our board, people that I provide social work supervision that people need to get their higher level of independent license as well. And with them, I'm just a human. I'm genuine. I'm authentic. Of course, I'm professional. But I remember being in businesses and organizations where they're like, well, if your employee comes to you and they have some kind of personal issue, you don't ask about it. You just say, okay, do you need time off? Do you have PTO? Do we need to cover your groups? No. Are you okay? Wow, that's really heavy. Are you okay?
Yeah, what support do you need?
And so I'm a human in that way. And I'm just very transparent. I share, not like I'm like, oh my God, like I'm not coming to them for a therapy session, but I let them know, hey, I'm really sorry. Things got thrown off this morning with the kiddo and I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I'm just a little more transparent, authentic, and genuine. And they've told me that they appreciate that because it's very much a humble approach. You're human. I'm human. We see each other. And we don't have any issues.
That's part of the problem in corporate. That's part of the problem in corporate is you have to invest time in your employees.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke about this yesterday. It was a discovery call and we talked about corporations and how I can't wrap my head around the fact that a lot of corporations still have not figured this out. And it's such a simple thing that if you treat your employees with respect, if you're authentic with them, if you're transparent with them and you listen to them, that is going to increase and encourage productivity in your employees. They're going to want to work that much harder for you, put in the work and stay. You'll have longevity. It won't be a revolving door at the company. It's such a simple concept, yet these corporations have such a hard time grasping it. And I can't for the life of me wrap my head around why they haven't figured it out.
Yep.
It's simple. It really is simple when you think about it. Mm-hmm. Be kind. It's a common human decency trait. Be kind to the people you surround yourself with, period. Whether that be employees, friends, whatever it is, just be kind. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cost you anything to do it. It's not going to affect your productivity. It's not going to affect your bottom line. Actually, it will. If you are kind, it will affect your bottom line because your employees will work harder for you. I don't get it.
And it goes right back to the dysregulation. Even if you aren't seeing it externally, if people are stressed, if people don't feel appreciated, if people are always on edge wondering when their boss is going to yell at them about the next thing, they're dysregulated and they can't. When you're in your stress response in the back of your brain, the logical thinking, rational brain, problem solving, all of those things is offline. They can't be plugged in at the same time. So that's where you'll start having issues. And instead of saying, hey, I noticed some challenges. Are you okay? Is there any other support you need? They'll come in and be like, here's a written warning.
Yeah.
Oh, did it again? Okay. Here's this. Okay. Yep. Now you're suspended or whatever. An action plan.
You're put on a performance improvement program or whatever the fuck it is. And we even had a friend of mine who worked at the same corporation I did. He was struggling with anxiety. And so when he felt that coming up, he would just go to a quiet meeting room and sit there. Management found out about it, got pissed off, blah, blah, blah. He had to go to HR. Eventually, he ended up getting let go. And all because he was looking after himself. Yet this company preached people first as one of their values and mottos. Bullshit, people first. You don't give a shit. All you care about is the bottom line. It's mind-boggling. I cannot understand why companies have not grasped this concept. It's very simple.
And it's interesting because it's always like the HR legal, like risk management. But it's like, if you're looking at it risk management wise, this also makes sense this way. So I'm like, even what is your, I don't even understand. Like it doesn't fit into that black and white of no, because they get to us or they, whatever it is. So
it's mind boggling.
And when, and like specifically to our profession, when, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but just like another research backed support of this is I talk a lot about, I say things that HR people don't like, and I do a continuing education training on relational supervision and like actually having these relationships with your supervisees. And the research in our profession of mental health counseling, that type of thing, shows that when you're more transparent, when you're open, when you're honest, your supervisees are going to feel safe to come to you and say, hey, this thing's happening. If they don't feel like they can approach you, your ethical issues can snowball. And before you know it, you have some risk thing to deal with because they didn't feel safe enough to come to you. Just like a parent. If a kid doesn't feel safe to come to you about things, they're going to hide it and it's going to get worse.
Exactly. A good leader has an open door policy and lets their staff know that you can come to me with anything. And we'll talk it out. We'll figure a way to make things work. It's absolutely. We could do a whole episode on this.
I'll come back another time about that.
Yeah. And working with people who are dealing with mental health, I'm curious, have you seen a notable shift in mental health and bringing it to the forefront or getting more exposure for the issues of mental health from when you first started in this industry to where we are now?
Yes and no. Yes and no. So I think globally, corporations and bigger business are kind of performatively acting in that way, just like the people first, but they're not actually embodying it. Like their employee assistance programs are like, yeah, you get four sessions with a counselor and it's, I just developed rapport in four sessions. What would you like me to do in that? And so I think that's a problem, but I do think Gen Z and whatever is below them, because I can't keep up with all the generations, but working with them therapeutically is, and seeing their advocacy on social media, that is where I see the change happening. They will very openly be like, oh yeah, me and my friends were talking about our therapists and I was letting them know. And I've seen a shift in people seeking services where they would previously call and it was kind of like a, oh yeah, I don't know, I think I'm kind of depressed. It was like this hush, they still weren't confident in it type thing. Yeah. And now we get people calling and I'm like, okay, what are you wanting to be seen for? And they're like, well, I was doing some shadow work and I realized that the relationship with my mom from blah, 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 was blah, blah, blah. And I thought I might need to get extra support with that. So I wanted to get counseling now. They're very like insightful. They have strong boundaries. They're not willing to take the crap. So in that light, I think our younger generation is really propelling mental health awareness forward. And not willing to just hide that anymore. They're overlooking at the older generation just taking it. They're like, no, we're not doing that. And it's a beautiful thing to see.
It was swept under the rug. I mean, the awareness is nowhere near where it should be. We still have a long way to go and a lot of work to do. But maybe in some cultures, it's still swept under the rug because it's frowned upon, it's shameful, it's a dirty secret, all of those things. Why do you think that is? And how do we find a way forward and make bigger strides to bring more awareness around it?
I think, again, I'm seeing it more in millennials and under are doing the work, and it kind of comes into they're breaking those generational bonds and patterns. And so I think just naturally that's kind of coming undone. But you're right, there is a cultural component where it's still, we're not really going to talk about that. So
yeah,
I try to get away from mental, it is under mental health, but sometimes I try to get away from it being under the category of mental health and just being like, hey, you're a human, you're going to experience these things. Let's empower you on how to manage them so that you can live a healthy and fulfilled life and you can thrive rather than being in survival mode all the time. So yeah, I don't know if that answers the question. Yeah, but
I think conversation is a huge piece too. We need to talk more about it. People still aren't comfortable. They're more comfortable than they were for sure, but they're still not fully comfortable talking about it for the most part overall, I think. That overarching view.
Yeah. And I think just statistically and what I see anecdotally is men are talking about it more, which is really good to see.
Yeah.
We really need that. I think it still is more stigmatized in men. They're, I don't want to feel weak or whatever that is, but that is what we need. We need cis hetero white men normalizing and talking about it's okay to feel your feels. Not only okay, it's necessary.
Yeah.
It's okay to cry. It's not only okay, it's necessary to release that stress from your body.
Now we're getting into a whole other topic where we're talking about conditioning, because boys are brought up to not show their feelings. It's not okay to cry. Stop acting like a little girl. Put on your big boy pants. All of these things, right? That needs to shift. So that starts with new parents educating their boys specifically that it is okay to share your feelings and to show your feelings so that they just grow up knowing that's just who they are. It's it's second nature. It just becomes part of who they are. It's a big thing. But the conversation piece is also a big part of that, because we need to talk about this stuff. And you shine a light on things by talking about them, having the conversations, as difficult as some of them may be. We need to talk about them, because if we don't talk about them, nothing's going to change. Yeah. Conversation is the catalyst for change. And we need to implement that in all areas, in everything. But here, what we're talking about now, we got to stop sweeping it under the rug. We have to have the conversations about it.
And it's amazing education. What can be done. Like I said, my son's almost 2.5. He has consistently, since about 18 months is when we kind of started implementing, oh, you're getting super overwhelmed. Because meltdowns started to happen then, right? Yeah. Meltdown, quote unquote. No, yeah. They're dysregulated. They're having lots of big feels in a tiny body. Valid. So we started, let's use your breath to calm your body. And now he's at the point where he just does it on his own. He was playing with Legos that are too small for his age, but he loves them.
Yeah.
And he was getting really frustrated trying to put them in there. And he was like, oh, I can't do it. And I said, oh, bud, I think you can. Maybe we just need to calm your body. And he goes, and then I watched him and he kept playing and he got frustrated again a couple more times. And I did not have to intervene because he was like, and then try it again. And now he'll notice it in parents and he'll notice it in me and my husband and say, daddy, take a breath.
Or like, this talks to this education piece too, having it in the schools, teaching the children. From a young age. It starts at home, of course, but also in the schools, continue that at school so that they know, do you need a hug? I love it.
And then like yesterday he came up to me and he come running out and he was smiling because I taught him how he really loves hugs. And I said, did you know that you can give yourself a hug anytime if nobody's around and you really need a hug? So he came running out in the kitchen like this and he was just smiling at me. I said, oh, are you giving yourself a hug because you needed one? He said, yeah. And I said, would you like mama to give you a hug? And he said, yeah. And I gave him one. He just squeezed me for a while. We just held it. And then I let him down and he said, I really needed that hug. And I'm like, you're 2 years old.
That's
like,
amazing.
You have
though.
The capacity more than some other adults to be able to communicate your needs and find a healthy coping skill. And that's not to judge anyone. It's just saying we are doing people a disservice as a society. We are capable of more. And we are worth more than what we're offering right now.
For sure. What do you think is one of the biggest roadblocks or hurdles that is preventing us from shining a brighter light onto the problem and getting more assistance and awareness around it?
Patriarchy, capitalism. Okay. Honestly, that's my answer.
We
live in a society that's the rugged individual.
Hustle culture, bullshit.
Hustle, productivity base, worry about yourself, always be on, always be achieving, always be producing, or you're not worth anything if you're not achieving or producing. I mean, we are a pack species. We need each other.
Yeah.
We lost that in this culture that we have now. Now it's seen as a sign of weakness if you need help or if you need someone else. And we need each other. Like, we have to take care of
each other. I'm sorry. We cannot do this thing called life alone. And I say this I've been saying this for so long now that we've lost that sense of community. Mm-hmm. I think back to when I was a kid and my mom babysat the children. Parents dropped their kids off to, here you go, can you watch my kids for the day? Or can you watch them for a little? I got to go run, do something. People spoke with their neighbors. People knew their neighbors. This is where it starts, is with community. And I think about now, and I look around my neighborhood where I live, and neighbors don't even fucking talk to each other. They walk with their heads down. That's it. It's horrible. We need to get back to that. We've lost that. And this was long before COVID. Long before COVID, this
I told my husband, I was like, yeah, we should really work on buying a snowblower a year or so ago. And I was like, the neighbor across the street lets you use his all the time. I was like, it'd be really cool if we could have like community items. We don't all need to go waste all this money. Hey, let's have a couple community lawnmowers, riding lawnmowers that we use together. And it's just, and then my friends and I will joke about going and buying a private island and we all do our own role and take care of each other in an ideal world. But
that's it.
But
right?
Like, back to your question, that's the problem. All of these things, all of the things I'm talking about are natural and normal to manage and deal with. And it's our constraints of society and the way it's built that really hinder our ability to do that.
Friday, I went to a funeral, a neighbor, good friend, her mother passed away. So we went to the funeral, we came home, we got dumped on with a ton of snow that night, and they weren't home yet because everyone went out for dinner afterwards. And so my wife and I were shoveling our driveway, and then we thought, you know what, we've got our shovels out, let's shovel theirs. They're not home yet. They've just been dealing with a lot. We went and shoveled their driveway, then we shoveled the neighbor beside ours driveway. Then I went and shoveled my mom's driveway, and I went and shoveled her neighbor's driveway. It's like, why not? I'm perfectly capable of it. Why wouldn't I help people?
Yeah.
It's absolutely. A simple, again, it goes back to the simple concept of human decency. And
it almost goes to like
community.
Judgment first, right? A lot of people go to, for example, my friend, her car broke down and it's not working. She needs to get a new one. She's not in a situation where she can buy one. She needs to get places. Her kid needs to get to school. And her dad was just thanking me on the phone. Oh my gosh, I was so worried. I didn't know how I was going to get her all these places and do all these things. Thank you for helping. And I'm just like, duh. Like my answer is just duh. Of course, why wouldn't I? Does it take me out of my way a little bit? Of course, but that's what you do for people. You
in
care about them and take
of
care of each other.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's, again, it's just human decency. Mm-hmm. It really is. What message of hope would you like to share with individuals who are currently struggling with mental health issues, or, and how do you envision the future of holistic mental health support?
Message of hope. You're not alone, even though your brain tries to convince you that you are, because that's what our brains will do sometimes. We kind of forget that our brains are wired for survival. They're very basic. And the majority of what we're functioning out on a daily basis is unconscious. It's subconscious. It's not even rational in the moment responses. So there's nothing wrong with you. And you're not alone. And you're not alone in your struggles. And my other thing I always say to people is that listen to your body, because you know what's best for you. And don't let anyone convince you otherwise. If your gut or your body is telling you something, it's probably true, and do everything you can to seek that out. There, when you finally feel brave enough to reach out and seek out the support, there's people with open arms waiting to support you.
What would you say is one of the most important things you've learned in your life? And what was your life like before learning it? And what was your life like after you learned it?
So many lessons. And some of them are ongoing. So the after part is throwing me off because it's like a work in progress. I would honestly say, going back to what I just said, the listening to your body, I was so, like many of us, not necessarily clinical pathology level dissociated, but I was so dissociated, so disconnected from my body. I was so heady. I was so cognitive. My head was just like always running ahead and my body was just like just bumping along behind me miserably. And I would preach it because I learned it and I knew it, and I would preach it and I would teach it, but I wasn't implementing it myself. And I ended up, when I was in that toxic job, I ended up having very scary active suicidal thoughts. That I had passive suicidal thoughts before. I'd had depression before, but these were like persistent and like planning, right? And then also I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia and I was having all sorts of flare-ups and issues with that. And I was like, whoa, okay. I think I need to actually do what I'm preaching. And I honestly think it wasn't until I had my son where it was really solidified, because someone else required me to take care of myself, or I couldn't be there for him in the best way. And he deserves that. And so I think the lesson that I learned was truly listen to my body and not feel guilt. Being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, even if I'm flaring, the business still goes. And I always had a hard time. Oh God, I don't want to cancel that meeting. Oh, I don't want to disappoint them. Now I think about it for a second and then I'm like, no, it's not important.
Me first.
Yep. It'll be there later. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
And I'm getting so much better with that because it's a constant
reframe. It's a work
in
progress.
Yeah. And society is reinforcing the other all the time.
Yeah.
Social media, looking at people sharing only the good. And so it's just
the highlight reels that people share.
Yeah. It's just the confidence in knowing what's good for me and not willing to waver on that.
What do you think your unique skill set or superpower is that's helped you become successful?
It's like a combination of my presence / aura. That makes me approachable. Some of these things are like kind of, oh yeah, duh, you're in a therapist role. Of course you should be these things, but being non-judgmental and validating and normalizing people, it's interesting because I get a lot of my people that I supervise are like, oh, what interventions do you use? Or what's your blah, blah, blah. Oh, what's your training? What's this? I'm like, honestly, out of all the things, the most that I do in counseling and with all the things, even in my personal life, the most things that I do is basic psychoeducation, giving you tools and information you didn't know and should have, and validating and normalizing your experiences. Of course, you have a hard time communicating in your marital relationship. This was your example you were given as a child. Of course, you are codependent or have codependent traits and don't know how to get along with anyone else. No one gave you these tools, right? So just seeing people and validating, of course, and then empowering. So I don't know. I guess it's just my presence and aura and being non-judgmental and being open-minded and flexible and willing to take on other perspectives and seeing people's uniqueness.
Speaking of success, what does that word mean to you? How do you define the word success?
I think it's now on a daily basis at this point. I can look at things long-term. For the success of our organization, we're going to work on these long-term strategic goals, of course, but it's more on a daily basis for me, how I feel about myself and how I'm able to regulate myself and fully experience things rather than being, like I said, disconnected, dissociated from them. Being fully present, recognizing when I'm dysregulated, calming myself down, that's success for me. It's on the personal level and it's on a day-to-day level.
What aspect of your personality do you think has been the most helpful in your career?
Probably some of the things I just mentioned, that non-judgmentalness, passion and fierceness. Once you get me on my soapbox, which podcasts do often, you're going to see that stuff come out of me and I don't waver in it. I'm willing to say things that might make people feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to go against the grain. I'm willing to be the elephant in the room. Yeah, I think those things have really helped me, especially in advocating for people. Yeah.
What was a turning point in your life and how did that affect you?
Leaving that job, coming to that point with my physical and mental health was the biggest turning point. I mean, I was raised by a single mom who always taught me never rely on a man.
We taught our daughters that as well.
Yep. And so when I found myself in this position of, I came home, he's my husband now of 4.5 years, but when originally, I think we were together 2 months, maybe. And I came home and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to die. I foresee my death if I stay here. And he's quit. I can cover the bills. You'll get something else. And I looked at him like he was crazy. A, because I've never had that level of support in my life from somebody other than my parents. And B, because I'm not relying on you. You're a man. I don't know you. I take care of myself. We just got together. What do you mean you can pay the bills until I get another job, right? And I just laughed it off. And then the next morning I went and sat at my desk and had just this knowing come over me. It's now or never.
Yeah.
You have to do this or you're not going to be able to keep doing what you're called to do. And I did that. So I took a chance. I was very bold. I did something that I thought I would never do, but here we are 5 years later. My gut instinct felt, that's what I mean about trust yourself and trust your body and trust your intuitions. Like my gut knew, even though this is against what you've been told, this is okay. This is going to be all right. And so that was the biggest turning point for my life was taking back my power and not letting someone else decide the rest of my life was going to be really.
Yeah. Who in your life has had the biggest impact on you and why?
My mom. For sure. I'm sure that's parents are probably a pretty common one, but she was just a superhero. She had me and my brother. She found a way to go back to school at the career center and while having me in daycare, like there at the center and getting her certificate so she could get a good job in the medical field and just seeing her accomplish and do all the things she did. And even though we were maybe getting some public assistance benefits or maybe we had a housing voucher or something, like, I didn't know any of that. She was very humble and all of that and never let anyone know that we were struggling, but she was always there to get our needs met. And she's the one that really taught me because she worked in the medical field. She's, no, I tell my patients and I will tell you, you listen to your body. You do not let that professional tell you that there's nothing wrong with you. If there's something going on, you find someone that believes you. And so that's really carried with me as well.
What does the word empowerment mean to you?
Equipping someone with the skills they need to thrive.
What is an unexpected occurrence or blessing in your life that you're grateful for?
My son. My mom joked saying, oh, I have a career daughter, because I always said, I don't want kids. I have too much work to do. I don't want to have kids. And when we got together and got married, I mean, he was fine with that. Like both of us were like, yeah, we're career driven. We're doing all our things. And then my kid had a different plan. He needed to be here to teach us some more lessons.
Okay, we're going to jump into a little rapid fire section here. So the next grouping of questions just be 1, 2, 3 forward answer type thing. Okay.
Yep.
How would you describe yourself in one word?
Rapid fire as I think about an answer. Persistent.
If you could teach the world one thing, what would it be?
How to regulate their nervous system.
If you could be remembered for one thing, what would it be?
Empowering people.
What is one thing you love about yourself that is not related to your physical appearance?
My perseverance and my refusal to give up.
What is one thing you want but cannot buy with money?
One thing, Brad, one thing one in the thing. Current tumultuous world. Collective community, collective support, collective validation.
If you had a theme song that played every time you walked into a room, what would that song be?
I'm just hearing There She Goes in my head. So that's it. I think that's the title of the song. There She Goes Again. Yeah.
That concludes our rapid fire section. Now back to our regularly scheduled program. What is your why?
It's just innate. I don't even know if I could encapsulate it in words. It's just a calling. It's something I feel required to do. It's my purpose. That's the best way I can describe it, is just a knowing.
It's a beautiful feeling. Mm-hmm. It really is. If you could step into my shoes, what would you have asked yourself that I didn't ask you?
Man, you asked a lot of really good questions.
Thank you.
I don't know.
I received that.
Yeah. I don't know if there is anything outside of that. I think you asked a lot of good ones.
If you had the opportunity to sit down and have a 1 hour conversation with one woman, any woman in the world, who would it be and why?
Gosh, that's such a good question. There's too many powerful, influential women I would want to sit down with.
It's funny when you hear someone say there's so many to choose from. It's okay. Well, if there's so many to choose, it should be easy to pick one, but
it's not. Would probably be a really powerful civil rights movement. MLK's wife, who I'm blanking on her name right now. Coretta King. Yes. Coretta Scott King. Mm-hmm. Or I can't remember her name at the moment because you asked me a direct question and my mind goes blank. But one of the influential people of the LGBTQ movement, someone in the social justice type role.
Yeah. If you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
I'd give so many pieces. Would they be taken? No. Because my instinct is none of this matters right now. Like all the things you're worrying about with the school and all of the drama, and that's not important. But maybe something like trust yourself or listen to your body or something like that. Or I would have empowered myself to be able to regulate my emotions and effectively communicate. That would have been helpful.
Lastly, Amanda, if you were to deliver your last 30-second speech to the world, your tribe, your corner of the world, your people, what would that last 30 seconds sound like? What words of wisdom would you impart?
I'd probably just try to throw in my little psychoeducational of, hey, this is what's happening in your body when stress happens, and this is how you deal with that so you don't feel miserable. Like, I would probably use that 30 seconds as a little opportunity to be like, here, take this, be empowered.
Amanda, thank you so very much for taking and making the time to be here with me today. It's been an absolute pleasure having the opportunity to sit down and share in your story, your journey, and the beautiful light you put out into the world through all the work you're doing and all the people you're helping. I appreciate you, and I'm grateful to have you as a member of the Empowerography community. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me and asking such great questions.
Once again, my name is Brad Walsh, host of your Empowerography podcast. Today, my guest has been Amanda Costura. She's the owner and founder of Carve Your Own Path. Thank you so much, Amanda. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks, Brad. Same to you.
Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. If you haven't yet, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with all your friends. You can find me at visuphoria.ca and follow me on Instagram at Empowerography Podcast and on Facebook at Empowerography. Please join me next time for another inspirational story from yet another amazing woman.